This podcast is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and for contact information on publicist Steve Joyner.
Bill, today's guest is promoter Mida Goodwin. I'm thinking maybe he can get me booked on a tour.
I'm sure he can. What else can you do, beside being a voiceover bot?
I'm a musician, of course. Have a listen to my playing. This is Home on the Range.
At least now I know why the deer and the antelope don't play anymore.
Attention, rebels of the Sure Pollution. Today's podcast is being brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/sherpa. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And now Mr. Bruce will lead you into the Sherpa Chalet. As a reminder, please don't disturb the yak.
Welcome to Too Many Podcasts, the podcast about podcasts. Now, podcasting from the Sherpa Chalet on Mount Podcastia, here's your host, Jim, the podcast Sherpa.
Hey there, Rebels, and welcome to Too Many Podcasts, the podcast about podcasts and so much more. How you doing? It's me, Jim, the podcast Sherpa, and we've got a nice interview today. It's very different. He's not a podcaster. He's made his name doing lots of concert promotion on the Warped Tour in previous years, and I'm not making this up. He's also run for president, and had I known this guy was running for president, he definitely would have gotten my vote. I can guarantee you that. He's a really interesting guy. He's as unique as his name. His name is Mida Goodwin. I bet that you don't meet too many people named Mida in your lifetime. But I was glad that I met this guy. He was a lot of fun. Really interesting stories. A lot to say about the music business and promoting concerts and up-and-coming artists and a whole bunch of other things, too. I won't tie this conversation up any longer. Let's head on down to the conference room in the Sherpa Chalet and listen to my conversation with that guy named Mida Goodwin. Hey there, Rebels. I am in the touring room of the Sherpa Chalet today, and I am speaking with a man who is an alleged musician. He's laughing. He is a promoter. He's done lots of work with the music business. And also, this is, I think, the first time that I've ever said this about a guest, a former presidential hopeful. And he's here today. His name is Mida Goodwin. Mida, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Doing well. Thank you. Beautiful weather out here in California. Stuck inside like everybody else, but at least when I go outside, it's not, you know, burning up. So very nice.
The first thing that I noticed about you that's unique is your name. I don't think I've ever met anybody named Mida. And that's actually an Irish?
It's Norwegian.
Norwegian.
And there's a few. There's actually, and I haven't had, I'm just putting it out there. If anybody in, you know, Brooklyn, New York area works for the city, streets and you know, department, there is a Mida Street spelled the same way. I would love to get the street sign when they're retired. I had some friends out there who saw one once and they thought about stealing it, but they didn't. You know, I would have said bad, but, you know, still accepted it. You know, growing up with the name Mida, I never got one of those little pencils or license plate for my bike that had my name on it. So knowing that there's a street out there in New York with my name on it, it was an artist, very famous artist street there in Brooklyn. So if you're out there and you know somebody, hit me up. I will take one. I will be happy to put it on my wall.
There we go. I think they can let me know through my social pages at sherpollution.com, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm there. We have to get a sign for Mida.
Yes. I mean, if it happens, it happens.
That's right. Or even at the very least, a coffee mug or something like that with your name on it.
Well, see, I could make one of those now. I mean, that's an easy one. But to know that there's something that's out there that at some point I may get it. And they retire them and get new ones. You know, it's become a historical district. So the old signs were taken down. I know they're somewhere. Hopefully they didn't go in the garbage can. I'd put one up on my wall.
We'll have to keep an eye open for that. Anybody within earshot of my voice? Keep Midda in mind, folks. All right, so why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Currently, I'm back in Modesto. I graduated from high school here, Downey High School, which was also the high school George Lucas went to. He graduated in 62. I graduated in 85. We're alumni, but not classmates. I do live around the corner from his childhood home, though. But yeah, I've been doing music for 30 years. As you said, allegedly, I'm a musician. I say musicians actually practice their craft, and I don't. But I have been playing with the same band for 25 years. Novocaine. You can find us Novocaine209 on Facebook. And we're celebrating, like I said, 25 years this year. I play brass, woodwind, slinky buffoon, whatnot. I have played with the Violent Femmes, horns with them a couple times. So, but I fake it, you know. I make it up as I go along. I imagine most ladies I've been with are doing the same. So it's all good. Yeah, so there's that. I booked bands for 30 years, so that was always a lot of fun. Some of them have become somewhat renowned, so that's cool. And then just friends with a lot of bands that have come through and done stuff just by going to see them and them going into other bands. A friend of mine is the drummer of Sheryl Crow. Started out in an indie band called Bourgeois Tag, kept going, and then finally, you know, now, you know, he's done stuff with Smash Mouth, Third Eye Blind, Sheryl Crow. I think Body Wraith, I don't know, but he's played with a bunch of people.
Bourgeois Tag had a hit with a song called I Don't Mind at All, right?
I believe so. They were produced by Todd Rundgren. They had the hit, and yeah, they were out of Sacramento. Good fun band in the 80s. There's that. As you mentioned, the presidential campaign. I decided when I was turning 35 that I was constitutionally obligated to run for president. I met all the requirements. I was a U.S. citizen. I was born here. No felonies. I don't know if that's a requirement, but, you know, I did do felonies. And I was 35. So I was like, let's do it. 2004, 2008 were the big campaign years. 2003, I toured the whole U.S., putting up posters on porta toilets everywhere. See, the porta toilet is a lot like the voting booth. Everybody's equal. So that was important. And nobody was putting their swag on the toilets. So you go to these concerts and they're everywhere else. But I was like, okay, here's a blank canvas. Boom, right in the middle. And then 2004, I did a small run on the Warped Tour, but I maximized it. I laminated the posters, and then I knew a lot of people who did the merch there. So I put them on the merch table and I just taped them down. So they were stuck there. And then I got people like mad that I saw your posters all over Chicago and I didn't see you. You didn't come and see. I'm like, no, I'm not on tour this year. And then the stickers, of course, I threw up on all the different merch bag things and staging. So you'd see those around. So that was just those nice permanent things that were out there until the tour ended, until somebody else slapped another sticker over one or something out there campaigning.
So you were promoting a Warped Tour and running for president at the same time.
I was driving the van for the Plea for Peace Foundation, raising money for charity. And so I was getting paid for that. So it was like, makes perfect sense while I'm out there. I drive, I load in, and then I have a day free, you know, so why not throw some posters up and campaign? I made t-shirts, not my president yet, t-shirts, they were fun, buttons, stickers, had a friend who worked at a friend's shop, he did embroidery and he did a limited run of baseball caps. So, you know, we had some swag out there, it was fun. Lots of bands would, you know, I'd get them to do a tacit promo approvals. I'd have them hold the flyer, the poster, and take a picture of them. I got tons of different artists holding that. So it was a fun thing, but like mainly it was getting people to register to vote, encouraging them to educate themselves on the issues, and then go out and vote. And I talk about it. The sheriff, my mom's town, little town in Oklahoma called Arcoma, won by one vote. And it was the person she voted for. She almost didn't go and vote. She was sick. Said, I know my son will want to. There was in Atwater, California, there was a mayoral election where it was high card. The two guys who took, you know, had 48% of the three people way out ahead, two of them tied. They were like, we're running on the city not having to spend more money. So if we run And both of them kind of agreed that if they would go through their phone, they could find somebody who just didn't vote. So they got a notary in there, agreed that high card. So they pulled a high card. One of them took office. I mean, you think about it, what was it? 357 votes in Florida, you know, when Bush took Florida. You know, there was thousands of people who just didn't vote that would have wanted to see Gore elected. And they complained, but it's like, you can't complain if you don't vote. Well, you can, but it really doesn't matter. It's like, sorry. All you got to do is go out and let your voice be heard. And if everybody goes out and votes, there is going to be those changes. And it's usually at the local level. Local level, we're going to see a lot more change than national. It's just the way it is. Unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, the person at top only is going to do so much. There's only going to be so much good and so much bad that they're going to be able to do. And it's good because we have the checks and balances. The more change, I always say, the more change we can do locally, the better. And then you work your way up.
What was your campaign again for when you ran?
It was my slogan is "No promises, just love." Honestly, I knew I wasn't gonna win. As Spin Magazine said, I was an amiable nut job. I wasn't crazy. I knew that it was just something to do. Like I said, I'm constitutionally obligated. You know, we all should run for president when we're 35. But it was, you know, for me, it was mainly getting younger people involved. And, you know, doing the music stuff for so many years, I see these kids coming in and always complaining after an election, not asking, did you vote? No. So at a certain point, I'm like, okay, this is my way to rally by being out there and talking to people. And it's funny, I have a striking resemblance, other than he's, you know, a good foot and a half taller than me, Fletcher from Pennywise. We have a similar build and facial features. So a lot of people thought the photo was him. So I actually, when I wasn't on tour, I talked to the merch guy and said, hey, I have all these koozies and different things. I don't even care. You can sell them, donate the money to charity, keep the money for yourself, whatever. I know people are coming. He goes, no, every day somebody sees one of those things and comes over here asking because they think it's Fletcher. I go, I know. I go, Fletcher should do a shirt of his own. And he did later. But I was like, just take them. And that way I had a presence once again. I didn't have to pay somebody to bet on the road. You know, I was just like, hey, here's some swag, sell it, give it away, do whatever you want with it. When I was done with that first run, the second on 2004, I was like, take it out on the road. So kept that presence out there. At that time, the social media stuff was pretty much taken off. So I don't know if you remember Friendster. That year in 2003, MySpace was pretty much getting out, but they were really hitting the music side first. So I was a beta tester pretty much on it. Just because I was on tour and they were out there on Warped Tour trying to get people involved. So it was funny. It's like a lot of those bands and people would see it, you're on their top 10, Rise Against, who were pretty big, when they only had a top 10. I was one of their top 10. And so these people go, how did you get, like, they're lazy? They're like, what? It's like, well, I'm acquainted with them. I'm friends with their bass player. But the fact is, you know, they're lazy. They could switch somebody else out. I was just one of their first 10 friends because we were all each other's first 10 friends. You know, it was like nobody was on MySpace. There was no MySpace until, you know, it kind of got built from that. And then with Facebook, even I had a friend who invited me on early on. And so, and even that, I made a page and just kind of left it for a while because it wasn't what it is. I mean, now it's kind of going the other way, but it hadn't gotten that, the point of saturation kind of thing where it was working for you. And like any social media, at a certain point, one of them falls off. MySpace is gone. I mean, it's still out there. Friendster is still out there, but nobody uses them, really. You know, how many people are on AIM? It's still there. It's those kind of things. So, you know, changing the tactics. Yeah, it was definitely fun. I mean, you mentioned seeing a photo of me with Joan Jett. One of them was actually 2004, Sacramento. She did, her and Billy Idol both did part of the tour. Warped Tour 1 year. So that was one, you know, we'd been acquainted from before that, kind of know her, and already being established with a Warped Tour, I was able to just go backstage. And once you're back, you're back. And as long as you're not annoying, you know, you can go up and talk to just about anybody, you know, and they'll talk to you because you're back there. You know, you're not just somebody coming to, you know, you get some people who do come back and they're like that. But if you're cool, you just kind of run along and talk to them and interact and do your thing.
So how massive an undertaking is the Warped Tour when you're promoting that?
Oh, man. I mean, I was low end of it, but it's, you know, they plan it for the whole year. It's a huge thing planning it. The guys who are in the crews and the drivers and all that, they've been doing it. I mean, when it's down, done, but it was 20 years going. I did it the 15th and 16th year. But I mean, it's like there's drives that are 8, 10, 12 hours sometimes. You know, pretty much you're leaving and driving all night and driving into the next location, unloading. I was a driver for the Plea for Peace, so I'd load in, get breakfast, then go get a hotel room and sleep sometimes because it was a massive drive. Then there's those drives like you're in the Midwest or in Florida where it's an hour and a half, 2 hours, or the East Coast where everything's kind of close together, but there's these major populations. You know, you can drive an hour and be in another major city. And so those were nice short drives. But I mean, going across the Midwest or the Northwest, the South, going through like Nevada and Utah and all that, where there's these massive drives, driving from Boise down to Arizona someplace, it's just these massive drives. But you got to do it. You got to plan not only locations that can accommodate a big tour, but also far enough away where you're not oversaturating. I'm glad that other people had all that figured out and I didn't have to deal with it at all.
I'm sure you must have worked with a lot of interesting personalities in the time that you've been doing all this music promotion. Could you share any stories? You don't have to badmouth anybody you want to make people anonymous or something. That's okay.
The nice thing is I've done it almost like a hobby. I've made a little bit of money on it. Not a ton, but it's one of those things where I book bands I enjoy, and if they turn out to be jerks, I don't book them again. So for the most part, I'm interacting with people that I want to interact with. And a lot of more people I either knew or I know they're friends. And so they've recommended it. And so I take care of them, make sure they get taken care of. And there's ones that, like I said, I've just become friends with. And there's those neat things where you get the call. The first time, no doubt, was on David Letterman. Their guitarist called me because he knew I'd appreciate it. That was kind of cool. And then I got a call once. The Boss Tones were coming through. And so their saxophonist called me up and said, hey, we're going to be in Davis tomorrow. Come on up. Real Big Fish, there was a show where literally they were playing Stockton. I wasn't putting the show on, but I get a call and they're like, you want to come? I'm like, yeah. You got any friends that want to come? I'm like, sure. It's like, how many people do you got? I'm like, I don't know. It's like, what's your guest list like? They're like, I don't know, 20 people? How many people you know? I'm like, I don't think I got 20 people to bring out. I'm sure if I just started telling everybody, but like, yeah, we know you and one other person in Stockton. So, you know, if you want to come out, bring whoever. They're same thing. The Boss Tones and this band, Suburban Legend and Big D and the Kid Table, all these ska bands that I was friends with were playing Modesto. And really it was me and ended up with two friends because the club they were playing sucked. Management was bad. Everything from the ground up. It was one of those things where I had a friend who played there and goes in and is like, wow, this is a great place. Too bad it's 21 and over. Then had an interaction with the management. Like, wow, this is a great place. Too bad it's 21 and over. And the management's kind of a-holes. Then it was like the sound, hey, this is great. And then at the end it was like, this isn't that cool of a place. But it was built to be a great place. It should have been a great place. Just it wasn't run very well. And they didn't treat the locals well. They didn't treat the fans well. One person who I was roommates with years ago that was from Modesto come out to the show. And then two people from Stockton who had never been there before and were fans of the bands that agreed to go. But I had up to 50 tickets. I could have invited 50 people. And I had three people agree to go to the show because the reputation of the club. Mm-hmm. And that's bad. It was like, hey, I have free tickets. You want to go? I couldn't even fill my car up with people.
I'm like, yeah, that's a little rough.
Like, hey, you guys want to go? You know, and it's not, well, I got to work tonight or it's last minute or whatever. It's like, yeah, you know, I'll go see him in San Francisco tomorrow. It's like, well, I don't have free tickets to San Francisco tomorrow. It's like, no, I'll pay for it. Okay.
So you couldn't even like drive down the street and hold them out your window and go, yeah. Hey, I got tickets.
You know, and I don't want to show up and start giving them, you know, like just people in line that are willing to pay because I don't want to be that guy. But it's like, hey, if I can get this list to the, you know, to them to get to the promoter ahead of time, we're golden. It doesn't matter. You know, they've been, this is an allotted amount of people that they could have come in for free. Three people out of five bands. You know, I had all five bands guest list pretty much.
Were there any bands that you started working with maybe when they first started out and you kind of had a feeling that they were going to really hit it big and then they did?
There's been a few and there's I guess there's those ones that you do stuff with. And I think it's more surprise sometimes. I'd done stuff early on with the Deftones. The first show that the Deftones ever played in Modesto, I booked them for that. And at the time, they were a little funky, kind of metally. They hadn't gotten their sound yet. And then, of course, when they did break, I was like, wow, okay. I mean, once they got signed, I was like, all right, they're going to go there. There's that. There's other bands that, like Granddaddy. I don't know if you know Granddaddy. I actually booked one of their very first shows for them. They were one of those bands, they're young kids, but I was like, if they keep it up. You know, there's those bands where you know, the worst thing is when you know a band has the potential and they break up. And that's more often than not, that there's some people that you just, they're so talented, they write such good songs, and they just implode. Or life gets in the way. You know, somebody has a kid, or they go off to college or whatever, but you're just like, if this was done. There was a girl from Stockton, her stage persona was called IR Cool. And if she had ever gotten, she just couldn't perform in front of people. But she would record these amazing songs, and I'd play them for people, and they're like, who is this? You know, and I could have gotten her booked on tours, could have gotten her, you know, like, I was at a party for the bass player from Tsunami Bomb's girlfriend, and guys from AFI are there, and from all these different bands were there, and I just brought in the little demo tape that she'd done, or CD, put it on, and everybody was like, who's this? Why haven't we played with her? Like, she doesn't play. Like, what? So those are the ones that are frustrating, are the ones that are just so good, but they just, something stops them from going there.
There's that one little missing piece.
Yeah. I mean, she just couldn't perform in front of people. And I even was like, look, we do a Gorillaz type thing where we just put a, you know, curtain up and, you know, you play behind it. We'll shine a light from behind, but we'll do like Looney Tune cartoons or something. I don't care, you know, just get up and perform. Let people hear what you're doing. And that, I think, is more so. There's more bands out there that have so much talent that just don't break. And that's a lot of the industry. You know, I was doing stuff with Real Big Fish early on. When they got signed, it got big. I wasn't surprised. So there's some of that, you know, where you get it. There's bands where you're thinking, this band should have gotten it other than this one. But part of it, I did a lot of work with the band Skank and Pickle years ago. MCA wanted to sign them. Ended up signing Sublime instead. Sublime, of course, got huge. Singer ODs on heroin, but Skank and Pickle's thing was they were selling somewhere around 100,000 copies per record on their own and making all that money. So it was one of those things where, as a label, what guarantee was the label going to be able to give them that by giving up control, giving up part of the publishing, giving up part of the rights of these songs and all that, that, you know, in the long run, they were going to end up making more money. And honestly, I don't think, I mean, it would have been hard. You know, you have to, if you're selling 100, 150,000 on your own, you have to sell 500,000 or more because there's so many other hands in the pot with a major label.
Tell me a little bit about promoting. You know, I mean, obviously, I mean, you've got this network of people that it seems that, you know this person, you know that person, and you know how to make things happen. I'm presuming that's a big piece of it, but there's got to be a little bit more to it, though. Well,
for me, a lot of it is just being organized. That's a big part of it, being organized and follow through. You know, I advance shows. At the show, I'm there talking to the bands. I think I've maybe in 30 years not been at two shows. There's that part of it, actually interacting. And that's building those relationships. And I think a lot of people, I had one girl literally tell me that I was the first person who booked her that actually was at the show since she was touring nationally. Like when she was younger and just playing locally, but I'm like, what? Like, yeah, no. But of all the places I played, you're the first person I actually interacted with online, you know, like on a phone call, and actually was there at the show. And I was like, that just boggled my mind. And so that's part of it. But, you know, back in the day when I was doing this regularly, I had two big month calendars, you know, the 36 by 24 wall calendars. And I had those, and like, here's shows that are booked, here's ones that are pending, bring them over, you know, doing all that, contacts, had the Rolodex, you know, just following up with everything. And you have to do that. And then just being willing to learn everything. I'm sure, you know, with the podcast, you're doing it all, you know, assuming you don't have an engineer there. Yeah, I mean, so you getting everything set up. But at a certain point, you do it. And when you do have an engineer, or you have somebody on the other side of it, making those calls, doing the stuff, it makes it easier. But you know what you're doing, you know how to do it, so you'll also know if they're not doing it right. And I think that's a big mistake people have, is not doing all the details in their own world, their own production, at least once, so that when they see somebody it's obvious. You know, you get somebody who's like, what, you haven't been, and you know it immediately because they're not doing it. You know what should be done, and you see that it's not being done, and then you're able to step in if you have to. You know, I've done sound. I've made my own flyers. I've gone out and done catering. You know, anything that needs to be done on a production, I've done it myself. And that also helps when it's a smaller show that you want to do something. There's always those events that mean something. It's a charitable event, or it's a band coming through that isn't big, but you believe in them. And so to make sure that they get taken care of, I just do more stuff. Okay, I'm running sound tonight and I'm making the flyer. I'm not paying somebody money to make a flyer. I'm going to put the flyers up. I'm going to set up the catering or figure it out. You do all the little details that you can to cut out the added expense. You got a bigger show and a bigger budget, you hire more people, you do all that. But there's so many of those ones that it's a Tuesday night, up and coming band, amazing, and they just wouldn't have a show or won't make any money if you do the full production. So you do everything to make it a full production, you just do more of it yourself.
And I guess if you're working with other people, you either have one of two choices. You have to learn to put a lot of faith in them, or you got to learn from them as well.
Oh, no, for sure. And it's definitely, you know, I've done a lot more on my own. When I first started doing the Comic-Con setup, the pop culture convention, the very first one I did had a 12-person board. And three of us actually did the work. And I've said that I would have never done an event like that if it wasn't for that group of people. But I would never do an event like that again with that many people involved. You know, it's like, you get the people who you need to do the job and you have them do it. I mean, every time somebody would stop down, I came in to bring music to the con. And by the end of it, the time allotted for the music wasn't allotted for the music, but I had already picked up doing booking the talent. And that one, we had Doug Jones and Sam Jones come out. Then I ended up booking because the person who was supposed to be doing vendors and artists, getting them booked and all set up. Didn't do it. We're 5 months in and they had two people or vendors. I'm like, this is outrageous. So I stepped up. So three of us stepped up and started doing a lot more. And then we ended up doing another event for a couple of years called the Kazis. And then 3 years ago, I started doing my own con, where it's mostly me and one other guy doing all of it. And then we get somebody to run the panel room day of. We get somebody to help with load in. Load out, you know, the day of kind of work. We pay them out, but for the year-long process, it's not a meeting a week talking about stuff because these guys don't have lives, but then they don't follow through on doing what they're supposed to do.
So you've done promotion for musical artists. You've done it for Comic-Cons. You've done it for comedians and artists.
I have done some comedian stuff, yeah. I did comedy back in the 80s for a little bit. Never got super serious myself on it, but I have a friend, Jimmy, who's a really good comedian and does, you know, was booking some shows, doing some stuff here, open mic stuff. And so we started doing what we're calling the brouhaha and pretty much booking comedy at tap rooms, brew houses, microbreweries. And so, you know, it's like the brew and then the haha, you know, mix it together. And it seemed to work and we had fun with it, you know, did that for a few years. So yeah, that was fun. And then I also 3-4 years running now. I've been back in Modesto 7 years. Yeah, about 3 or 4 years now, I've been the managing editor of the Modesto View, which is the monthly entertainment paper. So that's been fun and helps pay the bills. And then 5 years, 6 years now, I've been helping manage the Modesto Area Music Awards for the first 15 years, whatever. It's like, got nominated different events, but they started doing the promoter. And I was asked, I think after the first MOM I won, if I wanted to get involved. And I was like, but if you're going to keep nominating me as a promoter, I'm not going to, you know, get behind the scene. You know, I don't want to be that guy. People are already upset that I'm not from Modesto and I'm winning this award. So after 3 years of winning that award, I stepped down. Did a speech about it losing its luster and the glory of winning something if you're just going to win it every year. Pissed some people off. But, you know, I was like, I had to make a big deal out of not, you know, I'm not doing this again. And then I said, okay. And then, of course, the next year was like, oh, nobody's going to remember. I go, oh, people remember. I made sure people remember. So, no, you're not nominating me. So, I'm the only person who's won 3 years in a row and only one who's won 3 for the promoter. And I think a lot of it was those relationships, actually being at the shows, not just interacting with the bands, but actually with the fans. And then for the first 2 years, I was in Stockton. So I was had my own pond. So there was 9 other people I was competing against, but they were all pretty much working the same circuit in Modesto, same venues, same clubs, their fan bases, you know, all their same fish that they were looking to vote for them were all the same. So that was being split between 9. And I know that was a big part of it. You know, I was winning because they were competing against me. I was not competing against them.
You've got 30 years of experience.
There was that too. There was that too.
Yeah.
You know, I've done it longer than anybody else, a good 10, 12 years longer than the next person down who ended up winning 2 of them, but not back to back. So a cat named Mike Vanek, who is now in Bristol, Virginia, he's won 2. And then there's a few who've won 1 at this point, you know, but really as like, I'm, you know, I actually changed the name of my production company for a year after I think on the last year. So I'd won 2 years in a row, and then I changed it to the undisputed champion of the 209 production. You know, just to be a jerk, you know, have fun with it, you know. Every year, if I, you know, I always make a point of sitting in the balcony when I'm nominated for something so that it's a long walk to the stage. And I always take a long about route to it. And they're like, "Is it? Oh, no, I'm here." And I'm like, taking 5 minutes to get down to the stage. And it's all production. It's all, you know, as John Levitt would say, acting. So have fun with
Thank
it.
Thank you very
yes.
much.
Have fun with it. So that's that. But now I'm on the other side and I'm shifting even the way the Mamas is going. And we're working a lot more like scholarship for youths. You know, for the majority of the Mamas wasn't a nonprofit. Now it is. And it was pretty much just promoting the music and the scene and having a big party, giving out some awards. So we're still doing that. Not this year so much because of the COVID, but you know, we've raised money for scholarships and we've done a lot of live streaming stuff to help them make some money. We're writing up some grants, hopefully, so we can get some money to some of these local artists that this was their job, their livelihood. So trying to work that angle and make it more part of the community than just the yearly party.
Sure. That was actually going to be my next question. I mean, with everything coming to a standstill, I mean, we are recording this during the time of COVID-19. We should say that for people who were listening in 2035 or something like that, right? Everything has come to a halt.
Oh, yeah.
So what can you do? Is there anything?
We've done a lot of, like I said, streaming. First few months of COVID, I was doing 5 days a week, working with bands, getting streaming stuff out there. Now I'm doing it 2 to 3 times. This weekend, we're doing 50 bands on the Modesto View page. There's an event called Modstock that the Valley Music Institute, the School of Rock here in town would put on. It's their 10th anniversary. It's their big concert for all their youth bands, and it wasn't going to happen. So we stepped up to go, hey, let's stream it. So we're doing that. But yeah, I had 50 hours of music booked for the county fair. That isn't happening. I had 27 April 1st to October 1st, every Friday I had a concert booked. That we haven't had one yet. I mean, we do a yearly May the 4th event. It's a fundraiser for the Children's Hospital. All the Star Wars guys come out. We have a lot of fun with it. We did a virtual thing. You know, I had some different cosplayers read little golden book, Star Wars books. And that was fun, but it was different. You know, it was not the same. You don't see the kids' faces light up when they see Darth Vader or a Wookiee or, you know, whatever. We'd get 500, 600 kids out there doing a lightsaber battle when it got dark, you know, had lasers and a band playing, had to cancel all that. So it's really looking at other ways to do things to still kind of interact, but it's definitely taken a hit out of it. And it's everywhere. It's not just Modesto. It's, you know, New Jersey, everywhere in the world. I mean, I had sold out tickets to see Madness. They Might Be Giants, different things. All postponed till next June, July. And these were, you know, earlier in the year. And I'm like, okay, hopefully it will happen. It won't be the same. You know, both of them, the Madness one was their 40th anniversary tour.
They're fantastic.
You know, it's not going to be, I mean, they'll still do a lot of the same stuff, I'm sure, but it's going to be 45th anniversary now. The I think it was the 30th anniversary or 25th anniversary of Flood for They Might Be Giants. And that's what they were touring, doing the whole album. I hope they do the album because I've heard amazing things about the show. I think that's still their plan, but it's definitely not going to be the same because it's not in that year.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, we have this anniversary, but nobody could really
celebrate
it.
Couldn't come out for these shows, so we'll still play that those songs, but you know, but yeah, it's crazy.
Hopefully soon, you know, there will be something like, I guess streaming is one thing to, you know, make the music accessible.
It's a stop.
Hopefully there'll be something else for something else to bring people together and doing it in a safe way as well.
Yeah, I know. I think it was in Connecticut or somewhere in that area. They took a barge out on one of the lakes and people kayaked and watched the performance. Mm-hmm. Okay. To an extent, you know, that's something that can be done. And it was, you know, but it's really not the same. I mean, these drive-in concerts, okay, kind of cool. I do like that more and more places are doing drive-in theaters. That's kind of coming back, so that's cool. So I know there's attempts at it, but I mean, some of these shows where they're doing it where it's 10%, the 20% of the audience. So it's just you have these big gaps between everybody, and you know, I'm like, nobody's making any money on a show like that, especially the big show, because those really it's like to kind of offset it has to be a huge show. You know, hey, it's a venue that's 200 capacity and we can only do 20 people. Not worth it for anybody. Hey, it's a, you know, you're in an arena and, you know, you can have, you know, instead of 50,000 people, you can have 8,000 people. Hey, there's still a number of people, but, you know, you look out and you see this massive blank area around it. It's like, not so much. It's like, it's always sad. It's like seeing a sporting event at some home game for a team that nobody really likes, even the home. And you see one side where it's blank. Or, you know, I shot football a few years, last year for the high school footballs. And it was kind of sad. The away team, especially if they were out of town, away team, you know, they have by, you know, like a small area of people that are there to see the team, you know, moms, dads who might have come out. And you go look around the other side, it's a packed arena on the home side. That's kind of what I see the sporting events now. I mean, with nobody being able to be in the audience or in the arena. I mean, it's like wrestling with no people. All these different events, like with no crowd, just it's not the same. And I know everybody. I mean, as a not really performer, you know, I mean, I'm a performer. I'm a musician. Having that crowd response, you feed on that. Having the crowd for a sporting event, you know, the cheers. You know, I mean, why have cheerleaders getting the crowd riled up? If it doesn't, the members of the team don't feed off that. So all that stuff that we feed off as performers, live theater, having that audience sharing and clapping at the right times, laughing, whatever. I've seen some live stream comedy, and it's just terrible. It's just like them in a mirror. And part of any really good comedian is riffing with the crowd, asking questions, getting somebody to say something, going off on it, having a heckler that you just destroy because you're a pro and they're not, and you don't have any of that. So that's a big difference. Musicians can kind of go through it, but the energy is never the same. And you feed off of it. It's that whatever event we go to, regardless of what it is, it's that unique experience that we share. Yes, we can watch the Super Bowl on TV, but if you go to the Super Bowl and you're in that crowd, that energy and that experience is so much different. Going to a wrestling match, you know, I've never gone to, you know, SummerSlam or any of the huge WWF, WWE things, but I've known people who've gone. And I know the energy, you know, going to a concert, that energy and that combined experience with those people right there is unique and different. And that's part of it. Once again, live theater. Hey, we can watch Hamilton on the Disney Prime or Disney Plus, but it's not like seeing it in the, you know, in Broadway. And that's a big part is, I don't, and the performance, no matter how good they are, is never going to be as good without the crowd.
Hopefully we will keep our fingers crossed.
Oh, for sure.
The crowds will be back, my friend. So before I let you go, I got two more questions for you. What's the name of the paper that you write for? Let's let everybody know if they want to see your handiwork.
It's the Modesto View, and you can go to modestoview.com. And then I also, I'll throw this out there now. I do two radio shows. One is on Monday nights at 5 p.m., and it's all local music from the 209, the Central Valley of California. Modesto Area Music Radio, and that's on 95.5 FM KCBP here in Modesto Area, or kcbpradio.org. You can stream it on that. Same station, Tuesday nights at 9, I do a ska show called This Is Ska. And same thing, kcbpradio.org. You can stream it at anywhere in the world.
Very cool. I miss 80s ska, by the way. I was a huge English Beat fan.
I've booked them before. And Dave's a great guy.
Specials.
Yeah. I didn't book the specials, but I was lucky enough to book Roddy Radiation's side project, the Skabilly Rebels. And Linville Golding toured with them on the tour I booked. So I had two members of the specials. And because they were both there, the songs that Linville and Roddy wrote, they performed. And, you know, being the two guitarists in the band, they wrote a lot of the songs.
Sure.
So it was kind of amazing just hearing Concrete Jungle and these things in a small venue. Huge Madness fan, as I said. You know, everything back. I booked the last show that Roland Alfonso from the Skylights ever performed. It was a Halloween 25 years ago, something like that. Booked them for a show, and then 2 days later, he passed out on stage during soundcheck. And then was in the hospital and died. I mean, it was so. I kick myself now for being a good guy, because the sound guy asked me if I wanted to have him record the show, and I said, "Well, I didn't talk to anybody about it, so let's not." I wish now that I would have had him record it, and then I would have just went, "Hey guys, you know, here's Roland's last show. Do with it what you want." But yeah, I mean, and then of course, I did merch for Skank and Pickle, Less Than Jake. You know, put out a band called Dr. Rock and Moon Patrol. So a lot of mid-90s to early 2000 bands. Worked with all of them, you know, from the Boss Tones on down.
That's fantastic. And okay, one last question. Are we going to see your name on the ballot for 2020 or no?
No. I mean, it's one of those things where at this point, it would just be so much work to try to get it out there because of not being able to. I mean, it was definitely a great opportunity to do both. Being out on the road and campaigning, you know, traveling coast to coast with a major festival, you know, I was hitting every market. I was hitting places 2-3 times sometimes. And so there was that part of it. And because it was, you know, a unique election year at the time. I mean, it is again, but I got bumped from Jimmy Kimmel, unfortunately. But I was, you know, did a bit on Jimmy for the election. I miscalculated. I had a friend whose wife was the booker for Conan O'Brien, and I never did Conan, but I could have. But I was like, let's do it closer to the election, so it has more gravitas. And by the time it got close enough to election, I'm no longer working for Conan. I'm over here at this other thing. Blah blah blah. You know? So, and I really wanted to. My whole plan was to break. Prank Craig Ferguson on the later show. So my whole thing was, of course, get on Jimmy or get on Conan O'Brien. Conan O'Brien would mispronounce my name. I would say, you know, it's Mida, not Maida, not Maida, not, you know, whatever. Conan. And he was like, it's Conan. And I'm like, no, it's Conan. I go, yeah, I know how to pronounce your name. And then he would, of course, ask me, like, hey, you know, so you ever think you think you got a chance in hell of winning this thing? And I would say, I've already won. I'm on the Conan O'Brien show. That would get a good laugh and everybody okay. And then we talk serious and I talk about how people need to go and vote. Then I'd use that to get on the Craig Ferguson show. Not only is it a couple hours later where people are more susceptible to suggestion, you know, it's not as popular. So it'd be easy to go, hey, I'm on this show, I can get on that one. You know, you're on Conan. You know, these other late night shows other than Letterman are going to let you come on their show.
It's like a springboard.
Yeah. Well, it's like you're springing down, you know. I mean, it's like you're going later, but you're, you know, these shows don't have the same popularity. And so my whole thing would be, I go on Craig Ferguson, you know, and I can't do a good Scottish accent, but he would mispronounce my name, obviously, because it happens. And then he would ask me if I have a chance in hell of winning. And I say, well, Craig, I can call you Craig, can't I? And he go, yeah, okay. And I go, I've already won. I was on the Conan O'Brien show. Zing. And I'd prank him, and that would be, you know, I would have won then, you know.
Well, if you did run this year, Mitta, you definitely would have had my vote.
Well,
his name is Mitta Goodwin, and thank you so much for being on the show and sharing these stories.
But regardless, go vote. Make sure that, you know, you study up on the local issues especially. And, you know, if you're not registered out there, register. Come on, people. Regardless if it's a mail-in, it's an absentee ballot, the drive-up voting, I don't know how it's going to happen this year. We got to vote.
Hey there, Rebels. It's me, Jim, the podcast Sherpa. And thanks a lot for listening to my show. You know what I'm here to do? Help you with your holiday shopping. No, I'm not going to give you my credit card. I've got something better. It's called the Sherpa Shop. If you go to my website, sherpalution.com, on the About page, you will see a link that will take you to a shop that connects to over 100 websites, and you can buy all sorts of stuff online. It'll definitely make your holiday shopping so much easier. That's not enough? Okay, how about this? Check out my other podcast, The Expert Factory. And there is an episode about using online shopping apps. They can save you money and maybe even make you a little money, believe it or not. So have a safe and happy holiday season. Viva the Sherpa Lution, everybody. Let's get back to the show.
We're on that internet thingy at sherpalution.com.
And I'd like to say thanks to Mr. Mitta Goodwin for coming on down to the conference room at the Sherpa Chalet. You've been listening to Too Many Podcasts, and this show is part of the SJ Network, which is run by the one and only mega uber super publicist Stephen Joyner. And if you check out the SJ Network, and there's a link on my show notes, the Sherpa sheet, you can see all the other shows that belong to the network as well. Lots of changes coming on in that network. Some new people, some old people.
I'm one of the old ones.
I don't know what that was. Check out all the shows that are there, and maybe there's some more that you might be interested in, especially if you just started listening to podcasts. And some of those folks have been guests on this very show as well. And what about our show? You can listen on any of your favorite podcast apps. If you don't have one, go get one now. I'll wait. It's okay. I'm patient. Or you can check out my website, sherpalution.com, sherpalution.com. I don't know. And you want to use the Sherpalution word to follow the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And yeah, you see all sorts of posts in there throughout the week, letting you know what's going on. So again, thank you, Mitta. Thank you, Steve Joyner, for setting up the interview. And thanks to all of you for listening. And I will see you guys next time. Mr. Bruce, if you could please show everyone the door. And if you were an American citizen, I would vote for you for president too, Mr. Bruce. I wouldn't vote for me. No, not a good idea. Oh, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, we have to go. Yeah. But your campaign slogan would have to be Viva la Sherpalution. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Too Many Podcasts. Please disperse. You can go home now. I said you can go home now. Viva la Sherpalition. Viva la Sherpalition. Yell, come back now, you hear?